This is the final installment of our class this fall, our Wednesday night virtual class on the book of Proverbs. And we are doing a review in this class where we will run through the various topics, themes, and scriptures that we have looked at this quarter in the book of Proverbs and use that to tie everything together and hopefully cement in our minds and our hearts the things that we have seen and heard this past few months in the book of Proverbs. This is going to be premiering on Wednesday night, and it's right before Thanksgiving. And typically, when we are meeting in normal years, right before Thanksgiving, we wouldn't even have class because so many people are traveling. And so we'd have a singing and prayer service on that Wednesday night, according to our custom. And so the point being that you may be watching this video at a different time, catching up if you are on the road or traveling for the Thanksgiving holiday. And so whenever you are watching this, hope this can be helpful to you. And because this is the last class, I will be posting the slides for the entire quarter on our website in the same place that you have been able to access and would still be able to access the material, the handouts for this class under media and Bible class material on belairchurchofchrist.org. Now you'll also be able to go to that same place and find the slides, PowerPoint charts that we have used. And so you can go back and make reference to those, use those at any time. Again, lots of verses in Proverbs, and you'll see a ton of more verses again on the screen today. Not time to read and talk about each of those specifically, but all the material, handouts, and PowerPoint slides are available on the website if you'd like to use those to review or look deeper into the things that we have talked about. Okay, but we're not going to waste any more time with that sort of thing, and so let's jump in to our class. We've talked about quite a bit, and this is the 12th lesson, so there's been 11 lessons of study in the book of Proverbs. And so what we're going to do is just go back through and go through lesson by lesson and first remember, identify what the goal of that lesson was, and then go through some charts from that lesson and remember what it was that we talked about in that particular class. Again, just a way of reinforcing and cementing our understanding so that we can go with these things out of this class and live more wisely and according to God's wisdom in the fear of the Lord. Okay, the first class, what we did was try to place Proverbs in the larger conversation of the Bible. Proverbs is a very unique book, and so we wanted to understand the role that it plays in the revelation of God's word. And then also to understand the content and the themes of the book. And so one of the things we noticed is that Proverbs has a different angle, a different way of expressing God's will, especially compared to Old Testament content like the law and the prophets. And so whereas the law gives commands, you shall not commit adultery, and the prophets talk about the morality of such commands and this thing, this is not right, Jeremiah would say. You ought to be punished for breaking this commandment. The Proverbs give a more practical picture of, look, if you commit adultery, that's just senseless because don't you know the consequences that are going to come upon you? And again, it's not to say, we'll see this, it's not that Proverbs doesn't acknowledge the fact that there are laws, there are commandments, and that we are accountable to God. But Proverbs' perspective is more about the consequences of our actions and living in such a way to produce good consequences for ourselves as opposed to creating bad consequences for ourselves. And so there's a little bit of a different angle. And so one of the things that we've seen quite a few times this class is this summary here of the point of view of Proverbs, that it does deal with everyday, ordinary, we might say, instructions for how to interact with your family or how to work in your field or how to deal with money. These are earthly things that we're talking about, the here and now. And yet, Proverbs 5 verse 21 says that the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord and he watches all his paths. All of these ordinary earthly things that are talked about all fit within the context of God is watching over us and we have a responsibility toward him. Okay, also the point of view of Proverbs is that wisdom is gained through diligence. It's not easy to gain wisdom. And yet, chapter 1, one of the places, also in chapter 9, wisdom is pictured as a woman who is calling out and is very visible and very clear to say, come to me, I'm here, I'm giving you wisdom, I'm offering it to you. And so it's obvious and evident, and yet it takes work to take advantage of that. Okay. There are daily decisions. There are momentary things. How to respond when someone rebukes you, or how to respond when there is wrath being stirred up in a situation. These are very momentary decisions that have to be made that Proverbs talks about, and yet it also is talking about a walk, something that is ongoing. It is continuous, day after day, week after week, year after year, for as long as a person's life lasts. And then we also pointed out that the point of view of Proverbs is that a society is enforcing these things, that a society itself would honor good behavior and honesty and hard work and all these kinds of things. And so in chapter 29 and verse 18, a proverb that says, without vision, the people are unrestrained. There is a problem when the society doesn't respect these things that are in accordance with wisdom. Society begins to unravel, fall apart to some degree. And we see that at times in our experience. But Proverbs assumes that society will operate according to certain principles so that wisdom will be rewarded and folly will be punished. And remember, we talked about this last week as well, that Proverbs is a unique voice even in the wisdom literature. And so we won't repeat too much here. But remember, Proverbs is giving wisdom for living well now, whereas Ecclesiastes and Job are talking about some of the exceptions to that those rules. Okay, so yes, doing certain things in Proverbs will lead to certain results, and yet in Ecclesiastes, time and chance happen to them all, and there is disappointment that comes about. Proverbs, the righteous is rewarded, the wicked is punished, and yet Job makes it very clear that, there is calamity, grief, even on the righteous, and they must deal with that. But all of them talk about living life and dealing with life, whatever comes our way, in the fear of the Lord. Fear God and turn away from evil. That is wisdom. And I'll just show you this one more time because I didn't mention it last week, although I did in lesson one. Go to YouTube, go to BibleProject.com, watch their wisdom literature video series, and they present these three characters, and it's a great way to visualize the different perspectives that each of these books, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job, offer in the conversation about what it means to live well in God's world. Okay, in terms of the outline, the organization of the book, again, to be brief, the first nine chapters deal with the discussion of wisdom. What is wisdom? What is it like? The encouragement for the son to accept the father's advice. And so that's where we see a lot of the big themes about God creating the world in wisdom and the difference between wisdom and folly and the picture of those who live by wisdom and who don't. And then in chapter 10, really on through the rest of the book, there is this specific advice about what do you do with your money? What should a marriage look like? How should you raise your kids? What does it mean to work hard and so on and so forth? Okay. But even those sections are broken up, or that section is broken up into various other sections, and you see that here. But again, largely speaking, first nine chapters, the principles and themes related to wisdom tend to the rest of the book, the specific sayings and proverbs about living wisely in various aspects of our life. Okay. In lesson two, we talked about Hebrew poetry, and we talked about the idea of parallelism, which has come up in other classes as well. And that's really what you want to remember, if you remember anything from our discussion of Hebrew poetry, is that in terms of literary devices, Proverbs works mainly in parallelism, whereas there are, which means that there are at least two lines, sometimes more than two lines, but at least two lines that relate to one another somehow. And there are different ways that it does that. A lot of times it's a contrast, right? The fool does this, whereas the wise person does this. This happens to the wicked, this happens to the righteous. So they're parallel in that way, in that they contrast a certain point. Oftentimes, though, there is a parallelism of similarity. And sometimes it is to intensify that you know, the way of the wicked is darkness. Okay, that's one thing. But then the second line says they stumble and they don't know why. So that is, man, that's even more of a clear picture of how dark the way is for the fool. But noticing and knowing when you read Proverbs as well as Psalms and other poetic passages of the Old Testament, that the two lines relate to each other somehow, that helps us, because then we have to figure out, well, how do they relate to each other? But that can help with our interpretation and our understanding. And there are other literary devices as well, personification being a main one, where inanimate objects are given human characteristics. So the ant, for instance, in chapter 6 is personified in order to teach us a lesson about wisdom. But that was the lesson on Hebrew poetry. In lesson 3, we talked about wisdom and what is wisdom after all, and how do we get it, okay? And so we talked about the everyday sources of wisdom, and remember that there are lots of ways that a godly person, that a wise person can learn. And the world in many ways is a laboratory for a person who is looking for it to gain all kinds of instructions from all different kinds of observations. So again, to chapter 6, go to the ant, you sluggard, observe her ways and be wise. You can look at nature. Look at the hardworking ant working hard without an overseer. And hey, that's the way I should be. That'd be really wise to live in such a way that I would always be hardworking and no one would ever have to be looking over my shoulder. I would get done what needs to be done and be productive in society. But there are others as well, advisors and teachers. There is a great gain in many counselors, or victory in many counselors, chapter 11. We learn when we are rebuked. We learn in chapter 6, verse 1 to 5, when we make mistakes, we see how badly it turned out. We learn from that. But we also learn from the mistakes of others and the instruction that others receive. We can benefit from it as well. And so one of the things we talked about in that lesson, I hope that we will think about going forward, is if Proverbs paints a picture of an ecosystem of wisdom, we are receiving wisdom from various sources. We are also maybe giving wisdom to other people, our children, other friends, people that trust us, our spouses. Let's find out how we can do that. Let's see what role we can fill, not only in gaining wisdom, but in giving wisdom to others. And this was the chart that we used to show how God is the source. He is the origin of all wisdom. All wisdom is God's wisdom. Okay, but God has chosen to reveal his wisdom in various ways, the Bible, of course, being a huge part of that. And for most of all of human history, the vast majority of God's people have had written word from him to lean on and to trust in. But Proverbs also makes clear, as well as other places in Scripture, that God chooses to reveal wisdom in other ways as well. Okay, so that helped us get closer to defining wisdom, giving a definition for wisdom, but we did that more specifically in chapter 4. And so one easy way to do that, or clear way to do that, is to see what is the difference between the wise person and the foolish person. And so the wise person fears the Lord. The foolish person says there is no God. That's from Psalm 14, verse 1. The fool says in his heart, there is no God. So that really is what it all comes down to. What's the attitude towards the Creator, the one who is the judge of all? The foolish person rejects that idea, maybe largely because they don't want to deal with the implications of that idea. The wise person starts with humility and a fear of the Lord, and then all of the rest of the stuff fits in. Okay, so the foolish man is not going to want to hear anything the law has to say, is not going to want to hear anything someone telling him what to do. He just wants to live his life, stay in his way, and never change. Okay. And that's what he hates, is being told to do something else, told to change, told what to do, what not to do. He just wants to figure it out and do it himself. Whereas the wise person is always looking, always listening. How can I get better? How can I grow? I know that I'm not right on everything, and there's a lot that I still have to learn. And no matter really how old I am or how much I have learned, there is still so much more to learn. And so I'm not going to trust in my own understanding, but I'm going to first lean on God, and then I'm going to be willing to receive instruction from the various sources around me. Okay, so we noted how this relates so well to a passage like in Romans chapter 1 that talks about how those that rejected God and that a society, a world of rebellious humans, of which we are a part, that turned against God and turned to such unnatural and horrible sin, starts with the fact that we as humans did not know God, did not glorify him as God, did not recognize the knowledge of God. And so from there, everything spins out of control. And that really is the essence of wisdom and folly in the book of Proverbs, that folly is those that choose not to fear the Lord, that hate knowledge, whereas wisdom are those that start with that fear of the Lord, honoring him, glorifying him, and then open to receiving his instruction. And so our definition of wisdom that we came up with was this: the skill of living well. So wisdom is a skill. We gain it. We get more of it. We get better at living life. Okay. That's a cool thing to think about, because life is hard, and life is hard to do well. There are many people, and we know this from our own personal experience, we don't always live life well. We fail a lot at life. And the various challenges and responsibilities that it holds. But wisdom is the skill of living well. And that skill that we can get more of comes from fearing the Lord humbly and desiring to learn and grow. That's where wisdom starts. So wisdom is a skill founded in fearing God, wanting to learn and grow, that helps us to gain more of that skill. So it is both a character that we possess of wanting to learn and a commodity that we gain to be better at living. That is wisdom. And so in chapter 5, we looked at the motivations for living well. Why should I do this? Or what is it that Proverbs say will be the rewards for wise living? And remember, there's kind of two sides of this question of the rewards or the motivations of wise living. On one hand, there are very practical reasons of motivations that Proverbs does say. You'll live a long life. You'll be remembered. You will be popular, or you'll have friends and a strong family connection. Okay, you'll prosper monetarily, financially, from hard work, from diligence, from living well, from being honest. It will benefit you in all of these ways. And yet, there's also another side, which is the spiritual reason that God weighs the hearts, God weighs the motives. God knows us from the inside out, and so he being the judge, he being the one that we are accountable to, that is really the much greater reason, motivation for living well or living according to his instructions, okay? And then taking that a step further, in lesson 6, we talked about the description of the way of life and the way of death in Proverbs, and what that shows us about what it means to live well, what it means to live in wisdom, and what it means to live in folly. Okay, so go back to that idea of wealth that we talked about. Yes, Proverbs says very clearly that there is a natural consequence of living wisely, working hard, taking care of your things, and because of that, a person will prosper and will gain wealth, will gain riches. Okay, that is a consequence, that is a reward of living wisely. But the Proverbs also has a lot to say about the disadvantages of wealth, the imperfections, the falling short of true fulfillment that wealth is for an individual. When you have wealth, people want to steal your wealth. You become a target of that. wealth, and this is 11 verse 4, so I'll read this for you. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. And so, yes, wealth is a benefit and a reward, but there's only so much it can do. It can't benefit you. It can't save you in the day of wrath, whereas righteousness is a refuge that is bigger than whatever might happen to us here on earth, okay? 18:11 is the proverb about that riches are a strong wall or a fortress for a rich man, but it's a high wall in his imagination, the second part of that proverb says. So there is a sense in which wealth makes us feel that we are very secure, but that is a false sense of security. 27:24 says that that riches are not forever, and 23 verse 4 and 5 talk about being careful to gain wealth, because wealth, money, sprouts wings and flies away. Money comes and it goes, and there is a sense in which the easier it comes, the easier it goes, and so that's some of the warnings about get-rich-quick schemes or dishonest gaining of wealth. But just in general, the picture of wealth, 11:28, he who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like the green leaf, okay? So wealth is a reward of living well, but it's fleeting, and you shouldn't trust in it. If you do trust in it, the Proverbs say you will fall. And so there's something better than living with wealth, okay? And what is that? These three that start, the three verses on the top of this chart are all very similar. Let's read them very quickly. I'm going in order of the proverb, not in order of the screen, but 15:16, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. 15:17, better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. And then 16:19, it is better to be humble in spirit with the lowly than to divide spoil with the proud. So you see how all three of those are saying the same thing. Something is better than wealth, okay? And even if you're only eating vegetables, right, bread and water, or even if you only have a little bit, don't have many possessions, it is far better to be in that situation if you have righteousness, if you have peace in your home, if you have love with those that are around you, than to be rich, to have great meals, to eat the best food, to have the most comfortable house, and be proud, or to be in conflict with those you love because selfishness is eating at your relationships. And so there is something better than wealth. And that gets us to what the real reward of wise living is, and it's life. And not just life as in staying alive, but the flourishing, the fullness of life in all these different areas. And so we talked about this. You could go back and look at these verses. But remember, in every aspect of life, there is a flourishing, there is a fullness, there is a blessedness. And that's really what Proverbs is getting at. That your relationships will be full and they will be wonderful. That there will be a confidence and a security that you will have. And 13:12, I believe it is. I should double check that. 13:12 is the proverb that talks about desire fulfilled is a tree of life. And that image, which comes up from time to time in Proverbs, of the tree of life, I think that really captures what we're talking about here. That living wisely is like eating of the tree of life, to where life is just beautiful and wonderful. And again, compare that or put that together with what we've just seen. That may mean that you are experiencing the benefits, the temporal benefits of wisdom with wealth, prosperity, and all that. But more than that, you can have this tree of life and this blessedness even if you're living with in meagerness or in some sort of difficulty. The real reward is a fullness of life, which is described, as you see this again, with satisfaction, contentment, rootedness, not being uprooted, and confidence, but is described with the metaphor of a path. And so there's the way of life, there's the way of death. The way of life is that confident, full, blessed, satisfactory, you know what I mean? And then the way of death is misery and anxiety and difficulty and stumbling and confusion. And my favorite place that this is expressed, and we've read it several times in this class, is chapter 4, 18 and 19. The path of the righteous is like the light of dawn. It shines brighter and brighter until the full day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumble. That's it right there. The way of wisdom is in righteousness. And in righteousness, it is bright, it is clear, and it is brighter and brighter and clearer and clearer. But the way of wickedness, the way of folly, is it's darkness and it's confusing and you're stumbling and you really don't even know why you're stumbling. But life is just hard. It's a way of thorns, as it says in chapter 15, verse 19. Okay, from there, with all of that background of what is wisdom, what's the picture of living well, what does it mean to be wise or to be foolish, how does that relate to a relationship with God, all that kind of stuff. All those big ideas out of the way, then we moved on to the specific topics, starting with parents and children. And remember that if folly is all these things we've talked about, trusting in yourself and resisting instruction, then in dealing with our children, we should be noticing and looking for how folly is expressed in children, which it is. And we'll notice the verse in a second says that. But the children tend to be rebellious and they want to disobey. They want to be stubborn. They want to push the limits. They want what they want. I'm talking about even down to the smallest children. They want what they want. And if they can't get what they want, then they're going to be upset about it, okay? And maybe there's a laziness and a carelessness that that we see bound up in them, as well as obviously obvious evil. But all these things, this is the picture of folly in Proverbs, and this is what we see in our children. And so the goal should start with, the beginning of our goal in terms of raising our children should be to drive out that folly from them, that stubbornness, that rebelliousness. And 29:15, it starts towards that, saying that if you just leave a child to himself, it will end up being a disgrace because those characteristics of folly will just grow and grow and make life really difficult for that child as he grows up. But most clearly in 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. So that folly is there. We need to deal with it, drive it out, because Proverbs says that folly will harm that child as he or she gets older and be destructive for them. It's the way of death, after all. So we want to keep them off of the way of death by driving out the folly, the rebelliousness, the stubbornness, the selfishness from them. And that happens using the rod of discipline. And so we work that into the learning process, that we use the rod of discipline to drive the folly far from them. But then we do more. There's more required than that. More work is required than that, that we have to teach them what is right. We have to try to get that good teaching, that good instruction, not just into their minds, but into their hearts. So this is not just behavior management. This is using discipline to drive out folly, but then showing them with our words, with our actions, with our love, with our compassion, by patiently explaining to them, this is what God really wants. This is the way that you should think, and training their heart, shaping their hearts, and helping them to become the kind of person that will want wisdom and seek after what is right and listen to rebuke and seek after help. But the idea is, if there is that way of life, then Proverbs 22 verse 6 says we want to be working hard, again, from the earliest age, from the moment they're born, maybe even before that, to train a child in the way that he should go, to work them towards this way of life, so that when they are old, they will not turn from it. Okay, then we talked about speech and how speech itself is a life or death matter in the language of the book of Proverbs or in the way of thinking of the book of Proverbs. There are so many ways that we can misuse our tongue. We're familiar with it, not only through lying and slander and saying evil things about somebody, but even through boasting, through saying things that other people really have no business knowing, or saying things without thinking and just being rash or careless. All of these things are misuses of the tongue. And so we talked about the way that we can think through before we speak. Is it true? Have I really thought about it? It's okay to be quiet. It's okay to say nothing. It's okay for there to be an awkward silence, the thing we're most deathly afraid of anything else in social circumstances. It's okay. We can think. We can stop and think through what the consequences will be. Play out the scenarios based on what we might say. And then when we say it, we're in control. We're patient. We're even-tempered. We're saying it at the right time to whatever meets the needs of the people that we're saying it to. And we're saying something that will be positive and constructive and will give wisdom. And like chapter 15, verse 1 says, it is a soft answer that turns away wrath. And so, like anything else, wisdom in the way we speak requires diligence, thoughtfulness, attentiveness. But the benefits of it, the results of it, are life and goodness for us and for those that we're speaking to. Talked about the relationship between wives and husbands. We talked about the importance, the value that Proverbs has so much, even ends in chapter 31. The final picture of the book of Proverbs is a woman living by wisdom. How beautiful that is, how wonderful that is, how powerful that is for a husband, for children, and for a community. A worthy woman, who can find? She is far above rubies with her value. There's nothing that can compare with her. And we could go through the verses, but we won't in this review. There are a lot of verses that say the opposite, that if a wife is quarrelsome and bitter and all the things that wisdom warns against, then that will have a very destructive influence on her family and on her community. And so the importance of a wife of wisdom is beyond what we could express. Okay, but there is another side. There is the bad guy. One of the bad guys in the book of Proverbs is the adulterous woman. And so we have a passage like this in Proverbs 5 that talks about the dangers of straying away from the God-designed sexual relationship and looking for something that is exciting, that is new, that is appealing. And remember all the ways in which the harlot dresses and speaks and the psychology that she uses to try to attract this man to her bed. And Proverbs 5 says, you are just wasting your life. You're throwing away your energy and your time and your money and your effort. You're losing so much opportunity to live well in life and to live blessedly. By running after this momentary temptation that you will instantly regret as soon as you commit this sin. So what's the answer? How do we steer clear of the harlot and the woman of adultery? Is it just through no? You know, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't go here, you can't. Well, there is some of that. But remember that Proverbs 5 really focuses on this. Before it gets into the warning, it says, this is the picture of romantic love that God designed. You have a beautiful, flourishing sexual relationship with your wife. You drink from your own cistern. It is yours. It's something for you to enjoy. No one else knows about it. It gets to partake in it. It's blessed. It's plentiful. It is satisfying you always. You're just intoxicated by her love, and so it is pleasurable and permanent. And in this type of full sexual relationship, that is its own guard against the dangers or the wickedness of sexual immorality. In lesson 10, we talked about another type of desire, other types of desires that we have to control. And remember that the common problem in each of these situations with the sluggard, that is the lazy person, the drunkard, the person that is addicted to wine, and the glutton, the person for whom food is a powerful influence in their life, something else is in control. That is a problem, and that will destroy us. When we are in control, of course, in the fear of the Lord, using God's wisdom, but when we are the ones in control of our lives and we are not mastered by our desires, that is the life of blessedness. And so we talked about the ways in which we counter this life of being controlled by our desires by being proactive, making the sacrifices necessary to work hard, putting off gratification to do the hard things first, being careful, planning, being cautious, and everything that we do, taking care of our possessions, taking care of the people that we're responsible for, and little by little, patiently, but with skill and with effort, we are building the life for ourselves in the way that God has designed. But remember the contrast even to that in the last lesson, chapter 11, was that even if we think that we can be in control, that we are living by wisdom and we are living life the way that God has told us to, and that we are using wisdom to explain the way things work and to craft our life in the way that we want, even still, there are limitations in this broken world that even with wisdom, we will not be able to explain everything. We will not be able to accomplish everything. There are things that are just not right in the world, and Proverbs identifies that. Remember, and you can go back and read it, chapter 30 is really a encapsulation of that. It could be that chapter 30 of Proverbs is a voice in the collection to say, not so fast, not everything is always the way that it should be. There are things that are wrong, there are things that are broken, and there are some things that we just can't understand, and all we can do is shake our head at it. And so that should lead us, that recognition of things that are wrong, that are broken, that we don't understand, that don't work the way that we think they should, all of that should lead us to more humility, more fear of the Lord, more trust in Him, putting things in His hands, saying, you know what, I don't have the answers, God does, looking to Him, trusting in Him, and recognizing our own limitations. And that really is, again, gets us back to the heart of the book of Proverbs. And so you do see this progression in what we have seen. You start with the fear of the Lord. In the fear of the Lord, you listen to His instructions and you build the skill. You gain the skill of living wisely, gives you more control over your life, helps you to create a life for yourself that is more and more blessed. And yet, in the end, there are things that we don't understand. There are things that don't work the way we think they should. And all that does is just give us more fear of the Lord and more humility to learn from Him, to trust in Him, and to rely on Him and not ourselves. That's the picture of wisdom in the book of Proverbs. So let's end with this. Chapter 3, the first 26 verses at least, to me, just express so much of this so well. It's one of the most beautiful passages in the book of Proverbs. And so I wanted to end with the words of Proverbs as opposed to my own words. And so with the couple minutes we have left, let's read chapter 3 of Proverbs, verse 1 to 26, and that will essentially conclude our study of the book of Proverbs this quarter. Proverbs 3, they will be on the screen one slide at a time. If it's too small, you can follow along, of course, in your own Bible. Proverbs 3, my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days, years of life, and peace they will add to you. Let not steadfast love and faithfulness forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, so you will find favor and good success in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your paths straight. Be not wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your flesh and refreshment to your bones. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of His reproof. For the Lord reproves him whom He loves, as a father the son in whom He delights. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding, for the gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding he established the heavens. By his knowledge the deeps broke open, and the clouds dropped down the dew. My son, do not lose sight of these. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, and they will be life for your soul and adornment for your neck. Then you will walk on your way securely, and your foot will not stumble. If you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, or of the ruin of the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence, and will keep your foot from being caught. Okay, that is our study of the book of Proverbs, and I thank you so much for not only watching now, but for keeping up with the class all the way through over the last few months, if you have done so. Class is done, and next Wednesday, we will resume our in-person Bible classes at the church building and start a class on the book of Judges. So join us for Sunday worship at the building. Join us going forward for Wednesday night Bible class. But thank you so much for your good attention in this virtual study of the book of Proverbs.